Thank you for downloading Producer's Pick from Sounds True, a podcast dedicated to bringing you moving, captivating, and intriguing selections from our programs. In this podcast, the producers at Sounds True have chosen a selection from a program they've worked on, which caught their attention as a unique or special moment in the recording process. This week's episode, The Covenant of Safety, comes from the audio program The Mind-Body Code, with author Mario Martinez. Mitchell Clute, a producer at Sounds True, recorded this program with Mario in our Boulder studio. Here's what Mitchell had to say about this week's producer's pick.
Mario is the founder of biocognitive theory, which synthesizes insights from medicine, psychology, and spirituality to address questions about physical and psychological wellness. I particularly love his approach to relationships, which, in contrast to pop psychology approaches, is grounded in science and informed by the insights of spiritual practice. Here, he speaks to how our relational wounds, shame, let's say, or abandonment, can be healed by their antidotes. Thus, shame can be addressed by acting with honor, and abandonment by coming from a place of commitment. Simple, but never simplistic, the approach he outlines requires a lot from the listener, but offers deep, authentic change in return for our efforts.
You can download this entire program, The Mind-Body Code, at SoundsTrue.com. And now, our producer's pick, The Covenant of Safety, with Mario Martinez.
So, that was the bad news, the wounds. Now let's go to the good news, the healing fields. Each of the wounds has a healing field, and you go from the wounds of helplessness to the empowerment that you get from healing. And if you look at a wound, and you are looking, for example, at the wound of shame, which again is hot, and it feels humiliating and embarrassing, the antidote for shame is honor. The antidote for abandonment is commitment, and the antidote for betrayal is loyalty. So let me explain that so it can make more sense. Honor, what does that mean? That if you are shamed in a relationship, or you feel that you're being shamed, the worst thing you can do is to shame back, because then you're speaking shame fluently. And remember from the earlier sessions, anything that the brain repeats, you become competent at. And therefore you become very competent and very fluent in the language of shame. But what if you act honorably at that moment and you ask yourself, what is the honorable thing to do here? What is the honorable thing to do? And you do it for yourself, not for the other person. Then two things happen. Number one, you don't perpetuate the language of shame. And number two, you put a mirror in front of that person's face to let them know what they're doing to you, because you're not responding, you're not reciprocating the shame. So let me give you a practical example. Your partner prepares a meal for you. You come home and you're a little late, and your partner says, "You're late. As usual, there you are. Look at all I did, and you're late." And you notice that you get incredibly angry, and you are responding in a way that's totally not commensurate with the action. It's just totally over-responding. You can bet that you're responding to an archetypal wound there. And let's say that it's shame. By the way, you can get angry with any of the wounds later. You can get angry with shame, but initially when you're shamed, what you feel is humiliation rather than anger. So you get very angry, and immediately you have this tendency to want to shame the person back and say, "Well, your food's not that good anyway," or whatever. At that moment, you stop. You always check your body. You always end body. Look at where you're manifesting the wound. Take a deep breath, and then bring out honor. What is the honorable thing to do here? And one of it could be, "Yes, I'm sorry I'm late, but I'm really looking forward to this dinner. What can I do now to show you that I honor what you've done for me?" Or anyway, you can use your own language, but basically what you're doing is you're bringing an honorable consciousness to respond to a shaming consciousness, and it begins to kill that language of shame. The same thing with commitment. You're getting together with a friend for lunch, and that friend is late, and you begin to feel the abandonment fears that you've been accumulating for years, and all of a sudden your friend gets there, and you let your friend have it. What you're doing is you're dumping your whole history of abandonment into that moment. And what does your friend need to do if a friend is learning Guardians of the Heart? That friend stops, checks the body out. You always have to do the embodying. You have to check the body to see what it's done to your body. And then you act with commitment. And commitment would be, I'm sorry I'm late. I'm really committed. You don't have to use the word. You can use whatever you want, but basically a commitment consciousness and say, all right, what can I do to correct the situation? So when you act with commitment, when you act with honor, when you act with loyalty, you don't let the other person dump their wounds on you, nor do you dump them on them, but you set clear limits. And another example would be, again, you come into a board meeting and your boss is there and your boss embarrasses you in front of everybody. Embarrass you means that person is inviting you to be embarrassed. At that moment, you check your body out, you breathe, and it'll only take a few seconds when you learn how to do this well. And then you say, I'm late. What do I need to do to make up my tardiness? But I'm not going to allow you to humiliate me like this. I'm a professional, and I require to be treated like a professional. But I'll stay late if I have to. I'll do whatever I need to do to correct the situation. See, that's an honorable statement. Sets limits, doesn't shame back, but also doesn't allow the other person to speak the language fluently with you. And that's what you do in your relationships. Now, at first, people don't like it. So you have to be ready for that, because people don't like joyful action. Joy is a very dangerous emotion that has to be learned slowly, as you can see now from what you're learning in biocognition. Margaret Kemeny did some research. She's a psychoimmunologist. She was one of the students of George Solomon. And she looked at what shame does to the immune system. And she found some very interesting things. The old model of stress was that the only thing that you had to consider was cortisol and other what they call stress hormones. There's more to that now. So what she did is she looked at a group of people and she had them write things that had been shameful in their lives, in things that they had felt guilty about. And she measured the cortisol, which is to see the fight or flight, to see the stress. And she measured something else, which is called pro-inflammatory products that I talked about earlier, the things that cause inflammation in the body. And what she found was that the people who were writing about the shame didn't necessarily have high cortisol. They weren't stressed in the classical sense. What she found was that these people were secreting a significant amount of pro-inflammatory products. So it wasn't the stress in a classical sense. It was the inflammation that was being caused by the shaming. So you see, the immune system is responding to this, even though there's no real wound out there. It's a biosymbolic wound. So this is why your health begins to improve. And you know now from our earlier sessions that pro-inflammatory products, when they're secreted on a chronic basis, they can lead to problems with cardiovascular illnesses, to problems specifically with rheumatoid arthritis, and many other autoimmune illnesses. So this is not just to act properly, but it's a way that maximizes wellness in a relationship. So the power of symbols is very important, as you can see now, that words can actually hurt you, and now we know that they can hurt you immunologically from the work in psychoneuroimmunology that I've been citing here. So biosymbols is really the biology of endowing value to something. You endow the value, whether positive or negative, to a word, to a symbol. Why do people die to protect the flag? That's a symbol. Or why do they die to protect a child? That's a symbol of fatherhood or motherhood. And they also have cultural loadings. For example, there were some studies that measured GSR, so skin resistance, which is an indication of levels of stress. And they would show a person a ring and look at the biofeedback response to the ring. Or they would show a person a cross. This is in the Western culture, and they would look at the galvanic skin response, it's called. And then they would have another word, innocuous word like chair or house. And they found a very interesting difference between the words that have cultural loading like a ring, which is a commitment to a relationship, which is an aesthetic item, or the cross, if you're Christian, is a very powerful symbol. The skin responds according to the cultural endowment that you give to that symbol. So that should be fairly convincing to you that symbols have an effect on your body, on your biology. And there are many, many other studies, but just one that basically encapsulates the idea of what we're getting here.